Hello, Mr. Ritter. Nice to see you again.
It's good to see you too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. What's the weather like on the East Coast?
We have a cold front in. The temperatures are in the teens. That's Fahrenheit. So that would be well below zero centigrade with a light snow. And the big problem is the wind. The wind cuts through you like a knife. How about you? How's the weather in Bulgaria?
We have snow here in Sofia.
There you go.
Thank you for speaking for our channel. Here is the first question. How are you? And do you have problems with the authorities? We heard that you have big problems with authorities in the United States.
Well, I mean, yes, there apparently are problems with the
authorities. I cannot remember. You tried to travel to Russia and they stop you.
Well, I have traveled successfully to Russia two times in the past 2 years. And I was scheduled to travel a third time in June to attend the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum and then to spend 40 days traveling throughout Russia to learn more about Russia. And as I was preparing to board my airplane in JFK Airport, the authorities, Customs and Border Protection Police, three armed officers pulled me out of the line and seized my passport. Without any explanation, they took it without any receipt. The interesting thing now is that the U.S. government denies that they took my passport. And so they're playing games because they don't want me to travel. That's the thing. Then on August 7th, my house was raided by the FBI. 30 FBI agents executed a search warrant on my house, seized my computers and my electronics. Without explanation, without charges. I haven't been charged with anything. It's purely an intimidation tactic designed to, I guess, attempt to silence me. It was linked to a Department of Justice effort to, I guess, to defend the integrity of the American elections. Apparently, my free speech violated somebody's sensibilities.
Why your investigation, named Agent Zelensky, remains muted, not getting the publicity it deserves?
I think there's a number of reasons. One, it was done with the assistance of a Russian production company, which makes it very difficult to market here in the United States. Anything that has Russia attached to it, it's impossible, for instance, to get it on YouTube or to get it on Facebook or anything. So the traditional mechanisms of getting it out there. And I think part and parcel of that, too, is because of the perception that I am closely aligned with Russia. People view it without viewing the film. They call it Russian propaganda. You know, I think everybody who has seen the documentary understands that it's a very objective documentary. I mean, look, I don't like Zelensky. I have made no bones about that. My dogs don't like Zelensky either. I don't know why they're barking right now, but the fact of the matter is, the facts that are contained in this documentary are irrefutable. They're just straight up. It's facts. They've been laid out in a in a sound narrative. There's nothing deceptive about it. And so, I think the reason why people don't want it viewed is that it's too accurate. At a time when America is talking about sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, to Zelensky, the last thing you want is people like me stepping up and say, but he's corrupt. He's illegitimate. He's not who he says he is. He's a product of Western intelligence. That's not the narrative that that the current administration wants to hear. I'd like to believe that if I had made this movie and released it in March of this year, that the reception would be different because the political environment will be changed in America. But right now, the political environment, it's impossible to put anything out there that's objective when it comes to covering Ukraine or the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Okay, something from the film, some facts from Zelensky. What is in the film for Zelensky?
Well, the film describes Zelensky's rise to power, who funded him.
From where he get the power, how he rises for the power?
Well, the main thing is that Zelensky has been manipulated by foreign intelligence, namely British intelligence, MI6. There's a close relationship between the Ukrainian oligarchs who funded Zelensky's rise to power and British intelligence, and that Zelensky is not the byproduct of Ukrainian democracy, but rather the manipulation of Ukrainian democracy to put this character in position at the time that he was needed to be in position so that he could get Ukraine involved in this conflict.
How you can prove this, the connection with MI6?
Well, he's met with MI6, and then we can take a look at the circumstantial evidence. You know that in the, I don't know how it works in Bulgarian courts, but in the United States, you can be convicted of capital murder based upon purely circumstantial evidence. And the circumstantial evidence of Zelensky's relationship with British intelligence and CIA is overwhelming. The CIA even admits it. The British admit it. So it's not as though I'm manufacturing or compelled to stretch the facts. The reality is that the British intelligence and the CIA have very close relationships with the Zelensky government. Then you have to ask yourself the question, when did these relationships begin? At what
Yeah.
point in time? Is this a byproduct of the war, or is this something that happened well before the war? And what we see is it happened well before the war, this relationship, and that Zelensky was a pawn in this larger effort by foreign intelligence to put a pawn in power in Ukraine who would do the bidding of the West.
What are the hooks with which they hold Zelensky? From his past, maybe.
We know that he's vulnerable because of lifestyle. Things. But the problem is that vulnerability only works if the person perceives himself to be vulnerable. His sexuality is, I don't think, a hook. The fact that he might be a homosexual or bisexual, normally that's blackmail type stuff. In this case, I don't think he hid it from anybody. So you can't blackmail somebody who is doing that. But it leads to other aspects of his lifestyle. For instance, his drug addiction, which is a real problem. It is a genuine problem, and that is a blackmailable thing. And I don't, again, think they're blackmailing, but I think they exploit. There's a certain personality that is attached to the lifestyle and the excesses that Zelensky has that is borders on narcissism. He's in love with himself. And so what happens is the hook is how you can manipulate his narcissism into getting him to believe that he can be something that he's not. One of the big setups here was his television program, Servant of the People, where he played a teacher who suddenly became a populist president. And that image was successfully implanted in the minds of the Ukrainian people so that when the Poroshenko needed to be opposed in the election, the oligarchs and the British intelligence put Zelensky out there, and knowing that the Ukrainian people had already been manipulated into believing that this figure could be president, even though he had zero qualifications to be president. That is the psychological operation that went on. And the hook is that they were able to, a normal human being, if you came to me out of the blue and said, "Scott, I'm going to make you president of the United States," I'd
Okay.
say, "No, you're not, because I'm not qualified to be
We
president of the
can
United States."
do this. Okay, I offer it to you. You can be a president of the United States. Why you don't believe me? I'm from MI6, for example. Why you don't believe me? How he believe for
Well,
me?
first of all, if you're MI6 telling me that I'm going to be president of the United States, I'd
Yeah.
shoot you in the face.
Why?
Because you're manipulating American politics. You have no right to talk to me about it. See, Zelensky is talking to foreigners about this. That's one of the big problems. Why is he even discussing this with people who aren't part of the Ukrainian system? If I want to be president of the United States, it's a decision I should make. It's a decision that I go out and I sell myself to people saying, "I believe I'm qualified to be president of the United States." And if I convince enough people to that, then they underwrite my campaign, and then I go out and I run for it. It's something I want to do because I believe this. But because I'm not running for president, if you come to me, I have to ask, why are you coming to me? I don't want to be president. I don't feel I'm qualified to be president, and yet you're here talking to me as if I should be president. Why? What are the motivations? Because they're not my motivations, they're your motivations. And there's the problem. who was motivated to make this man president of Ukraine, and it wasn't Zelensky.
And how he motivated Zelensky? How? With money? With blackmail? How?
I think the best motivation is to fool them into believing they can be. You see, if I come to you and I say, hey, I want you to be president of Bulgaria.
Okay.
I really don't want to. But I have film of you having sex with somebody you shouldn't be having sex with.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want you to be president. What are your motivations to be president? Are they pure? No. If I come to you blackmail and I say, I have you snorting drugs off the breasts of a hooker, I want you to be president. Are your motivations pure? No. If I say you've taken a bribe, are your motivations pure? No. I don't think they went to Zelensky and said, we have film of you, you're doing drugs, you're doing this, because that doesn't make a believer. Look at Zelensky today. He believes he should be president. He's an actor. And so what they did is they took this actor, they put him in a role where he played president. The Ukrainian people believed that he could be president, and then he was trained to believe it as well, that he could, in fact, be president. Now, what are his motivations? Pure. He wants to be president. He thinks he can do the job. And he also believes that he's serving Ukraine. This is the difference between being controlled by blackmail and controlled by mutual goals and objectives. You see, he didn't even realize at the time that he was being set up for a trap. Once he becomes president, the realities of the job come in. And now he has to make the political compromises that people make. And it's through those political compromises you start to own him. And that's what happened. He became president because he was convinced by others that he should be president, that he could be president. And then once he became president, suddenly he had to deal with reality. It wasn't a TV show anymore. He wasn't working off a script. And that reality required him to make compromises. And every compromise he made compromised him to the point that he became trapped. And next thing you know, he finds himself in a war, a wartime president. He's not a wartime president. He's not capable of doing any of this. He has to work off a script now. He says, I can't do this. Here's your script. All you have to do is read what we tell you to say. We're going to make things happen. We need you to say this. And now he becomes the actor. And now they own him. Because he was proven, it lead up to the war, that he can't be president. He knew he couldn't be president. He was incompetent. He knew he was incompetent.
But in Bulgaria, he was here. We welcome him like a leader of the free world. You know this.
The script, Bulgaria fell for the movie. You fell in love with the Hollywood version of Zelensky.
Maybe just journalists.
Journalists did. Whoever was in charge of shaping the narrative put the headlines, Zelensky, the modern day Winston Churchill. That's one of the genius moves of the British intelligence to make this incompetent fool the equivalent of Winston Churchill in terms of his ability to manage global geopolitics. The man is an idiot. Did you watch the interview he just did with Lev Friedman? Mm-hmm. 3 hours of nonsense, of drivel, of nothing. And yet it's going to be spun as if every word he says is Churchillian in its context and in its depth. And the man is as shallow as the day is long. But the media will continue to portray him as somehow being an effective leader because they've been paid really good money to do so.
Okay, that's mean the whole country like Ukraine become hostage of one person, Zelensky. Is it true?
That's... Again, Zelensky's a figurehead. They're held hostage by the West. Again, remember this. Everybody needs to understand this. The conflict between Russia and Ukraine didn't begin with Zelensky.
Yeah.
Zelensky's just the latest iteration of Western manipulation. You know, the first one, I think, was supposed to be Yushchenko. He came in power through the color revolution in 2005, I believe, after the West, the EU, helped orchestrate the illegal overturning of a Ukrainian election that put Yanukovych in power. But the West couldn't handle Yanukovych, didn't want Yanukovych. They wanted their Western Ukrainian nationalists because that was part of the strategy that the United States has been trying to implement since 1948, when the CIA first started parachuting in Ukrainian nationalists to reinforce Stepan Bandera's insurrectionists. We've been pouring money into this Ukraine project for decades now. So Zelensky's just the most recent manifestation of this. You know, Yushchenko is supposed to keep Poroshenko, I mean, not Poroshenko, keep Yanukovych out. But Yanukovych got reelected in 2010, and they couldn't overturn that election. And that's when the decision was made. See, people don't understand. The Maidan didn't happen in a vacuum. Maidan happened because the West, the CIA, the European Union said, we have to disenfranchise the Russian element of Ukrainian politics. It's too powerful, too influential. It interferes with our Ukrainian project. And so the Maidan in 2014 wasn't just about getting rid of Yanukovych, which they succeeded in doing. It was about disenfranchising all of the Russians. It was about eliminating the Russian element of Ukraine as a politically viable entity. The nationalists declared war on the Russians of Ukraine. That's the reality. That's what happened. And they needed Zelensky to make that happen. But before Zelensky, they had, again, Yushchenko and others. This has been a long-term project of the CIA to accomplish this. The CIA has 20 bases in Ukraine. Do you know what a CIA base is? It's a major center of operations. The size of the number of personnel can be assigned to each base can go from, say, 10 to over 100. In Vietnam, which was a 10-year war for us, we had 12 to 16 bases. In Ukraine, we have 20 bases. This is a major effort by the CIA. This isn't minor. This isn't peripheral. And those bases cover the entire gamut of operations, from unconventional warfare, guerrilla warfare, to deep reconnaissance strikes inside Russia, to political attacks on Russia, to undermining the Russian population inside this, to create pro-Russian armies, mercenaries to invade. This is what the CIA is doing in Ukraine. This is a major effort. This isn't a joke. This isn't a gimmick. This isn't a nice to have. This is a major effort by the United States to destroy Russia. The goal and objective of this is the strategic defeat of Russia. Strategic defeat doesn't mean that Russia just gets a slap on the wrist. When you strategically defeat Russia, you collapse the Russian economy. That means Russia goes back to the 1990s. You collapse Russian society back to the 1990s. You collapse Russia politically back to the 1990s. This is literally trying to take Russia back in time. That's what the strategic defeat of Russia is. So when people say, why is Putin doing this? He's doing it to save Russia from this campaign being orchestrated by the United States to destroy Russia. This isn't a game. This isn't a gimmick. This is as real as it gets. Talk to anybody who lived in Russia in the 1990s and ask them how it was. The horror of that decade. Millions of Russians died needlessly. Democracy wasn't created. It was destroyed, not by Russia, but by the United States. There's a memorandum that just came out, published in the National Security Archives, written by a senior State Department official, I think Mr. Mary, who was the charge d'affaires number two at the embassy in 1994. And he says straight up, what are we doing? We are destroying Russian democracy, not building Russian democracy. In backing Boris Yeltsin, we have destroyed the institutions of democracy we claimed we want to build. People criticize Putin and say Putin is the one who destroyed democracy, but Putin didn't inherit democracy. He inherited a CIA gimmick plan operation to use democracy to take control of the Russian government. Not real democracy, but democracy in quotation marks. People need to understand this. I'm not saying that the Russians haven't done anything wrong. I'm sure we can look at things and say they could have done that better. They could have done that better. They could have done that better. But if people don't understand that war was literally the last option, Russia did everything possible to prevent this war. Tony Blinken just gave an interview that gave it all away, where he admits, he said in September of 2021, we began secretly sending weapons to Ukraine.
Yeah.
Why? That's an important date, September 2021. In June 2021, Biden met with Putin in Geneva in their summit. And at that summit, Biden promised Putin. Putin said, if you want our troops to stop moving along the borders, then you need to stop what's going on here. Stop the Ukrainian buildup. Stop the threats. And the way to do that is through implementation, full implementation of the Minsk Accords. And Biden said, yes, I will instruct Blinken to do this. That was in June. In September, Blinken secretly sending weapons to Ukraine. Why? Had no intention whatsoever of putting pressure on Germany and France to implement Minsk. In October, the Russians confronted the Germans and the French and said, you must do this. And they said, no. Why? Well, we now know Angela Merkel and François Hollande have acknowledged that Minsk was always a sham, always a lie, always meant to buy time to build for NATO to build the Ukrainian army so they could attack and liberate the Donbas, to eliminate, to finish the CIA's job of eliminating the political viability of the Russian population of the Donbas. And Russia said not just no, but hell no. But did they go to war originally? No. In December 17th, Russia provides two draft treaties, one to NATO, one to the United States, saying, we're not looking for war. We're looking for a new European security framework that brings peace and stability to the region. It was rejected by NATO and the United States. In January and February, Russia reached directly to the Ukrainians and tried to negotiate an end. And the Ukrainians mocked the Russians. And when the Russian incursion, the special military operation began, it wasn't a war of destruction or occupation. It was a campaign designed to get Ukraine to the negotiating table. And it worked. 6 days after Russia crossed the border, Ukraine initiated or participated in the first round of negotiations in Gomel, Belarus. And by the end of March, they had a completed treaty, a peace treaty. A peace treaty was signed and ready to be implemented. And the West said no. The West said no. So don't blame Russia. Russia is blameless in all of this. Russia is simply defending Russia's right to survive. This isn't a war about Russia trying to destroy Ukraine. This is a war about the West trying to use Ukraine to destroy Russia.
And now, Trump's victory, is it a game changer?
Well, here's the thing about the term game changer. Okay, what game are we talking about? And I'm going to set it up. We had a
War
game that's been
games.
played since 2022 now. And that is the game of the United States using Ukraine as a tool to def strategically destroy Russia. That's the game. We lost that game. We lost it. Nobody can tell me today that Ukraine is
But maybe
winning.
Trump thinking another way.
Well, Trump's come in and said he's not playing that game. So he has literally changed the game.
How?
I mean, so Trump, how? Because we're not playing that game. We're not playing the game of continuing this conflict forever to empower NATO. Look what Trump is doing. He has said straight up, I'm leaving NATO. America's going to leave NATO. Oh, it's going to happen. And NATO's falling apart. We're talking about attacking a NATO country to seize their territory, Greenland. And we're not joking about it. And Europe's sitting there going, what the hell is going on? Now,
Moment, it's a little bit crazy to speak these things for Panama, for Greenland, for
why is it
Canada,
crazy? Why is it crazy?
because this is expansion.
Yes, but it's a game changer. I just told you he changed the game. So now why is it crazy? Expansion compared to what? I'm not defending what Trump's doing. I'm not. I'm actually condemning this. But I'm just trying to say that you said, is Trump's election a game changer? Yes, the game is completely different. We are now going to be expanding. We're going to be seizing Greenland. We're going to be seizing the Panama Canal. We're going to be creating Fortress America. That's Trump's vision. And in order to make Fortress America, we have to disengage from, regions that have caused us nothing but problems. We, Trump, doesn't want to be part of NATO anymore because NATO is a useless entity that only brings us harm and embarrassment. NATO costs us money that we don't need to be spending. And Trump believes that Russia is not a threat to Europe. Europe is a threat to Russia. And that the best way to equalize this and bring an end is to bring an end to the conflict in Ukraine. Trump, you remember he went from, I'm going to solve this with one phone call before the election. You remember he said that back in, I think, September. I could just pick up the phone and the war is going to end. And the Russians have told him that's not going to happen. Trump now says, I believe I can get this war over in 6 months. That's realistic. to have 6 months to work with the Russians to put NATO in its place. See, people think that Trump's going to come in and prop NATO up as a loaded gun pointing at Russia, telling the Russians, if you don't stop this conflict, NATO is going to intervene. It's not what Trump's going to do. Trump's going to come in and tell NATO, you're finished. You're done. I'm done with you. And tell the Russians, do what you need to do to clean this thing up and let's get this over with. That's what he's telling. He just gave a speech the other day where he said, Putin's 100% right. Ukraine is a threat to Ukraine and NATO is a threat. I understand what Putin's doing. That's completely different than what the Biden administration says, than Europe says.
You like Trump very much.
No, I am a person who believes in the Constitution of the United States of America. And I don't believe Trump understands the Constitution. And I'm very nervous about what Trump's going to do as President of the United States. I think that his approach towards solving the problem in Ukraine has the chance of succeeding. And so I support it. But don't conflate that with I like Trump very much. If you've studied my writings on Trump, I don't like Trump very much. I think he's a threat to the American way of life. But unfortunately, the American way of life has failed. Has failed. And Trump is saying that he's going to do something different. And he has the support of tens of millions of Americans. So America is going to be redefining itself over the course of the next decade. I do think that to call Trump a Republican is a mistake. He's not a Republican. The Republican Party, the Republican Party that I joined, is dead. Trump is MAGA. It's something totally different.
Trump is what?
MAGA, Make America Great Again.
MAGA, yeah. Okay, last question for Ukraine. Did the USA need Ukraine as an anti-Russian state forever?
No. If you listen to everybody talk about Ukraine was lured, and I can provide a little backstory to this. In 1997, I traveled to Kiev as a United Nations inspector, trying to get the government, I think Kuchma was the prime minister at the time, and trying to get the Kuchma government to stop black marketeers. There were certain Ukrainians that were going into former Soviet defense establishments and taking material and selling it on the black market. And one of them was selling equipment to Iraq. And I was to say, you can't do that. That's a violation of the sanctions and so such. It was interesting. The National Security Council of Kuchma was supportive. The FSB, or I guess the SBU, was not supportive. In fact, I had to leave Ukraine early because I was told that they're going to kill me. That's how upset they were. The corruption was unreal. In order for me to get an audience, I had to meet with three senior members of the Ukrainian government who, because I was an American, said, we need you to promise that you will write a letter to your government saying that Ukraine is a worthy member of NATO and that Ukraine should be a member of NATO. We want to be a member of NATO. And I said, but I'm a United Nations official. But you're an American, but I'm a United Nations official. I'm here on United Nations business. They never understood that. And, and so they just assumed that I would write that letter because I was an American. But my point is, Ukraine's always been under the belief that it had to be a member of NATO to expand and survive. NATO never wanted Ukraine to be a member. Ukraine is a horrible member. It doesn't qualify on any level. It's the most corrupt place in the world. Why would we want Ukraine to be a member? They're not democratic. It's an oligarchy. It's horrible. But we lied to the Ukrainians, and we let them to believe that they could be a member because we wanted to use the Ukrainians. Remember, the best tool, and every Ukrainian is a tool. We talked about blackmail for a president. The best tool is the tool that wants to be used, that believes that by being used, it's achieving a greater purpose. You don't want a tool that knows it's just a tool. If they know they're just a tool, they're not going to commit. We have lied and deceived the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian nation, about what our intents are. We will never allow them to be a member of NATO. It was never in the plans for them to be a member of NATO. Every time somebody talks about it, it's a lie, and they know it's a lie. But the Ukrainians continue to believe the lie, and that's the hope that allows them to continue to sacrifice, so many people on the battlefield, that if they just hold out for a period of time, they can become a member of NATO. They will never be a member of NATO. They were never intended to be a member of NATO. They were always intended to be a tool to be used and, if needed, destroyed and discarded in the larger project of bringing down Vladimir Putin's Russia.
Yesterday, you see, Mark Zuckerberg made a shocking U-turn and announced that he will be removing censorship. How do you comment on this fact?
How do I comment on this? We know that the FBI, Department of Justice, Department of State, and the Biden administration itself put pressure on American social media platforms to censor. We know this. It's not a matter of debate. The House Intelligence Committee and the House Judiciary Committee have published documents proving that the FBI reached out to suppress accounts. And we know the Biden administration has also done this. I'm personally impacted by this because they have suppressed my social media profile because they don't like what I'm saying. Mark Zuckerberg is one of those who has done that. That was because in order to survive in the Biden administration, you had to play their game. Well, there's a new chief in town, a game-changing chief, as we talked about, and his name is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is backed up by somebody who's not elected but very powerful and influential. That's Elon Musk. And Elon Musk has built his reputation as being the defender of free speech and buying the X platform or Twitter platform, making it X, and it's today the most powerful social media platform out there. It's surpassed anything else. And Zuckerberg is looking at it and saying, my business model has failed. Nobody trusts me anymore. They don't believe in the integrity of my of what I've done here because I sold out to the government. And so it's a business decision. Mark Zuckerberg didn't wake up in the morning and say, I suddenly believe in free speech. He doesn't believe in free speech. Mark Zuckerberg believes in making money. And Facebook, Meta, is a vehicle to make money. In order to do that, people have to have confidence in the product they're using. And right now in America, nobody has confidence in Facebook. It is a totally corrupted platform. And so I think Zuckerberg's trying to make a difference. But it's half-hearted. He still says, I will have people who enforce certain rules and certain this. For instance, what's he going to do about criticism of Israel when the U.S. government continues to say that any criticism of Israel constitutes anti-Semitism, and therefore it's hate speech and needs to be suppressed? Is Zuckerberg going to suppress that? Elon Musk is. He's Mr. Free Speech, but no. You can't really criticize Israel on X. You get suppressed. You get shadow banned. You get banned outright, depending on who you are and what you are. So this is just a game. It's just a silly game being played by Zuckerberg to try and win back an audience that I think he's lost. I think Meta isn't going to recover from this. X took the lead. X is defining things, and X is out competing Facebook right now. So we'll see what happens to Zuckerberg, but he should have done what Elon Musk did, stand up to the government, say not just no, but hell no. Free speech is free speech. The First Amendment is the First Amendment. But there's another aspect of Facebook that you should be aware of.
What?
It willingly allows its data to be accessed by the intelligence services of the United States and its allies. So in many ways, this is a ploy. We're not, no more fact checkers. It's a free speech platform.
Yeah.
Everybody goes, oh, great. And they write, and the intelligence services are sitting there writing down everything you're writing down. So beware of the gift that looks too good.
Yeah, I understand. Is it possible a war inside NATO?
Yeah.
Yeah, where?
What if Denmark wants to oppose the United States? What if Denmark wants to oppose the United States? You have France right now threatening the United States with the potential of war. Bring it on, France. Really, I mean, we haven't killed a Frenchman in a long time. We'll kill you all. Again, I don't know what Europe thinks is going to happen here. Is Europe going to beat the United States? This is Donald Trump. He's a game changer. He doesn't care about you. There's no romance in his heart for Europe. He views you as a problem. You're a disease. You're a sick continent that he wants to get away from. He doesn't want to pay you to rebuild yourselves. You're on your own. And if you want to play games with America, our bombs blow up your buildings as well as they blow up anybody else's. You have no power. Great Britain has a nuclear deterrence. Not the moment we turn it off, they don't. France will sink all their submarines. I mean, I don't know what Europe thinks it's going to do. They fell into the NATO trap. The NATO trap means that you are forever a colony of America. Now America decides we don't want the colony because the colony's broken. But the colony can't fight us. You have no strength. What military power does Europe have today? Name one military power institution that can stand up to the United States. There isn't one. Europe is a joke. They have no military viability. But the Europeans, they're going to be shocked about how they're going to be treated now. We're done treating you as friends. You're not our friends. You have betrayed us. And this is the thing I tried to warn the Europeans about. When Trump got elected, instead of reaching out a hand of friendship, Europe worked with the Biden administration to Trump-proof policy, to stab Trump in the back, to create complications in Ukraine and Europe that forced Trump to stay in. You shouldn't have done that because Trump hates you now.
What you say, Trump hates me now, hates Europeans now.
Yeah, hates NATO, hates the European Union. You're useless
why
to him.
Why he hates us?
Because you betrayed us.
Uh-huh. We betrayed
you
the Russians.
With Biden.
We betrayed the Russians too. You must know this.
Well, the Russians have a longer history of living with you and they'll forgive more easily than Trump. Trump is worried about Fortress America and worried about his thing. The Europeans, I think, have just made a series of bad decisions. The other thing, too, is that Europe is in the process of collapsing of its own volition. Austria, right-wing party. Germany, alternative for Deutschland. France, right-wing party. Who knows what's going to happen in England in the next election. Maybe Andrew Tate will be the next prime minister of Great Britain. Europe is falling apart, collapsing politically. It's already collapsed economically. And the only chance Europe has of surviving is if the United States comes in and says, we'll put a protective umbrella around you and we'll pour money in to help you rebuild. And we're not going to do that.
How important is Bulgaria for Trump and the United States?
Don't be offended. Don't be offended by my answer.
I will not.
Trump probably doesn't know where Bulgaria is on the map. And most Americans don't know anything about where Bulgaria is either.
I'm not offended. I know this, yeah.
We don't understand your history. We don't understand the role that you've played in the Balkans and the connectivity between Asia Minor and Europe. We don't respect your culture. So therefore, you don't resonate. You're not when we're thinking about the big picture, you're not being discussed. And that's a shame because Bulgaria, like every nation in Europe, is vitally important to the health of Europe. But I think one of the problems, and it's Bulgaria's own fault, when you decide to become part of the European Union, you eliminate Bulgaria. You have said that the most important thing is this thing called the European Union, and Bulgaria is just this minor element that really doesn't matter. Open borders, people can move around and work where they want. What is Bulgaria at that point in time? So Bulgaria has made itself irrelevant. Maybe the biggest favor Trump has done to Europe is to work to destroy the European Union and NATO so that Bulgaria, like every other nation in Europe, has to redefine itself and say, who are we? We are Bulgarians. What does that mean? What is Bulgaria's interests? Does Bulgaria really want to be aligned to Brussels? Or does Bulgaria want to be aligned with Moscow? Or does Bulgaria want to be aligned with Ankara? I mean, because historically it could go either way. But I think Bulgaria needs to declare its own independence here and determine its route forward. Again, I'm not here to tell Bulgarians how to do their job. It's not my job to do that. But I do think that...
Why not? You know Boyko Borisov. You must say to him what he must do now.
Well, I think it would be foolish for Bulgaria to totally subordinate itself to anyone. I'm going to use a real estate analogy. I put a house on the market, all right? And the first buyer, I say the price is this. The first buyer comes in and gives me that price. and I sell the house, I'm a fool.
Yeah.
What I need to do is wait for another person to come in and say that. And I say, no, but somebody's already put an offer on it. I'm going to raise your offer. Ah, oh, they come in. No, but they have an offer. Oh, now I get a bidding war in. And I find out what they're willing to pay for it. Bulgaria is a important neighbor to Turkey. Turkey wants to be the energy hub of Southern Europe. Why would Bulgaria immediately gravitate to Russia and ignore Turkey? Bulgaria is a house. Let people bid on it. Create a bidding war. Find out where the value of Bulgaria is to Turkey and Russia, and then you can make demands about what you need, what's good for Bulgaria. It's not that you need to immediately run and hide under the skirts of Mother Russia or, you know, under the fez of, you know, Papa Erdogan. You're Bulgaria. Make
Yes.
them come to you and say, hey, we want you to be part of our team. This is what we're going to offer you. Make yourself attractive to them. And maybe the European Union wants to do that as well. Isn't there somebody in Bulgaria that's about Bulgaria and not about the West? And eventually will the Bulgarian people rise up and say, this alignment you have with Brussels is destroying us, that we need to be independent and fine. I always believe that at the end of the day, when a people believe in themselves, they do the right thing. The people that support the West don't believe in Bulgaria. They don't believe in themselves. They believe that Bulgaria is inferior, that Bulgaria must subordinate itself to this Western vision. But if you take a look at the West right now, it's collapsing. Bulgaria needs to say, this is who we are. Look at Russia. I mean, Russia's big, so they have a lot of latitude. But when I was in Russia in the 1990s, early 1990s, the Russians hated being Russian, hated it. They were ashamed of being Russian. They wanted nothing more than to be in the West. They wanted to be part of the West. They were willing to sell their culture, sell their heritage to the West so that they could wear Gucci and Fabergé and look like the West. And that was disastrous for Russia. Look at Russia today. The Russians love being Russia. They're proud of being Russian. And they have a reason to be proud because they have defined what being Russian is. Why can't the Bulgarians fall in love with Bulgaria? Why can't you be proud to be Bulgarians? Why can't you say, this is who we are? This is our history. And we don't sell ourselves to anybody.